Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
Today is going to be a very fun episode because we are going to dedicate our time together talking about the best made-for-movie and TV songs. Now, there is a rich history of some of the best songs of our time, I would argue, being influenced and written just for the purposes of being in movies or TV shows. So Mary and I have picked out our favorite ones from our favorite era, late 90s, early 2000s. But before we even get into that, I feel like there were so many songs that I didn't even know were written just for movies or TV, and I had to share them with you, Mayor.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay, so the first one that jumped out to me, A Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins for Top Gun. I had no idea. Also, Moon River by Audrey Hepburn for Breakfast at Tiffany's. So this was written just for Breakfast at Tiffany's, and the writers made sure that it worked within Audrey Hepburn's vocal range, but it's been so overshadowed by Andy Williams's cover that the original version, like, no one even knows it exists. And Audrey Hepburn's version wasn't even included on the film's soundtrack.
What a waste.
All right, so the next one, Lose Yourself, Eminem. Wow. I like forget that this is written for 8 Mile. This song really changed a lot for music and movies. Mm-hmm. It was the first rap song to win an Oscar. Very cool. And it stayed at Billboard's number one spot for 16 weeks, making it the most successful single of his career.
That's like 4 months at number one, basically.
I feel like I still remember most words to that song.
Oh,
a true testament. That's how you know that it was good. Another one that really stuck out to me was Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley. I had no idea this was written for a movie. It was for Blue Hawaii, but maybe it's also just because I'm not super familiar with his filmography because it was just a little bit before our time.
That's such a pretty song, and it's just been covered so many times. I feel like that's a testament to a song, like how many times it gets covered in the future.
Totally. So we are going to talk about those songs for us that hopefully one day people are like, oh my God, I didn't even know that this was in a movie because it sticks around for so long. And we've touched on a bunch of other iconic songs in the genre in our Hilary Duff episode. We talk about This Is What Dreams Are Made Of and Raise Your Voice. Our Lindsay Lohan episode, of course, includes Ultimate from Freaky Friday. We've talked about Hoku and her song for the movie Snow Day. And of course, Disney Channel original movie Pixel Perfect. We covered a bunch of those songs already. So this episode is dedicated to ones that we haven't already mentioned. So don't yell at us.
Yes, because like I'm just predicting it. We're going to miss some big ones. I actually added an additional one to our list today because I was like, oh my God, I would have just set myself on fire if we didn't talk about this. So like, please do not come for us if we forget one of your favorites. These are just some of our favorites and we'd love to hear some of yours as well. And we'll give that opportunity in our Instagram for listener participation and voting. So keep an eye peeled for that. And just before we dive in, full disclaimer, we do not own or claim to own any of the clips that we utilize throughout this episode. Instead, the purpose of these clips are for commentary and critique. So let's get into it. Kelsey, please start us off.
So the first song that we're diving into is So 2000s It Hurts. It's Y2K pop punk dream perfection. And that is Three Small Words, which is in 2001's Josie and the Pussycats. Mary, before we dive in, do you have any immediate reactions?
Well, it immediately transported me to this time in my life and just being obsessed with this movie and soundtrack. I will say Pretend to Be Nice by Josie and the Pussycats was one of my favorites. Please don't ignore me because you know I adore you. Just pretend to be nice. You know I adore you. That ooh-wee-ooh-wee-ooh-wee-ooh part of the chorus, it's just so catchy. I love it all.
It's so good. I totally agree that it is just filled to the brim with bops. It's so catchy. This song was written by the directors and writers of the movie, which is kind of cool. Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont and Adam Duritz, who some of you may recognize as the lead singer of Counting Crows, as well as a musician, David Gibbs, who's written music for a ton of other movies like That Thing You Do. I feel like that lent another layer of credibility to it probably.
Yeah.
But This album is amazing. It's a little alternative. A fun fact also is that, and probably the secret weapon to its success, is that Babyface, yeah, the iconic producer, singer, songwriter, 12-time Grammy winner, that Babyface collaborated on the album. So we knew that it was going to be a bop from the very beginning as soon as Babyface stepped in the studio. For those of you who need a little refresher on the plot, so Josie is played by Rachel Lee Cook, aka of She's All That fame, and her two besties, played by Rosario Dawson and Tara Reid, have a band called The Pussycats. They are not popping. In fact, they're the opposite of popping. They're playing at a bowling alley and they have no reach, no fan base, no prospects. And they're seemingly plucked from obscurity in a town called Riverdale because, lest we forget, this was a comic book series. So they had some fun little nods to the comic book throughout the movie. But they're plucked from their Riverdale obscurity by a music executive who just seemingly murdered his former band after they discovered a weird, mysterious background vocal on their latest single. And this boy band is called Du Jour. Two members of the band are played by Seth Green and Breckenmeyer, who are just like in every movie in the early 2000s. So it's like hilarious to see them. And it was definitely supposed to be a spoof on NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
Backdoor Lover by Du Jour. This is like a boy band bop. I'm your
Yes. Anyways, it turns out that the music label is conspiring with the government to hide subliminal messages in pop music to brainwash teenagers into buying new shit every week and keep the economy afloat thanks to their babysitting money. So, but it's kind of dark because the musicians who discover the hidden messages are made to disappear, whether it's staged plane crashes, drug overdoses. There's a bunch of MTV references. Carson Daly even appears in it. He attempts to kill Tara Reid's character after she discovered this huge music industry secret, which is kind of funny because also at the time, Carson Daly and Tara Reid were engaged. They had so many like MTV news flashes. They did such a good job really making it feel like we were back in 2001. So the movie takes place in this futuristic world where literally everything is an ad. Hotel rooms, bathrooms, everything has a label and brand names are everywhere, which is funny because the movie is all about being against commercialism. And this was purposefully done. I think a lot of people didn't get it. They were like, ah, it's hypocritical, but it's supposed to be that way. So the soundtrack, again, that's why we're here today to talk about the soundtrack. And it charted at number 16 on the Billboard 200, which is not bad. But unfortunately, the movie itself was a big fat flop. People just like didn't get it. They thought that the product placements were hypocritical. Again, they didn't get the joke. So it really bombed at the box office and it made about half what it cost to create. But here's a fun story. About a year after the movie came out, the movie's writers met Bono and he allegedly tells them that he loved the movie. I take that.
Yeah, game recognized game. Come on.
And it's also insane when I dug into this movie how many crazy famous celebs auditioned to be in this movie. Maggie Gyllenhaal and Zooey Deschanel both auditioned for the role of Josie. And the producers were obsessed with Zooey, but apparently the studio really didn't want to cast someone who was unknown in the role. And nobody was more surprised than Rachel Lee Cook herself that she was cast because according to her, she couldn't sing at all. She couldn't play guitar. She had no idea why they went with her. But she was really like the it girl of early 2000s movies, I feel like, especially after She's All That. So Josie's singing voice in the movie, all these years, I thought it was Rachel Lee Cook, but it wasn't. The voice is Kay Hanley of the band Letters to Cleo. Some of you may recall Letters to Cleo because they were in another super popular teen movie, 10 Things I Hate About You, featuring Julia Stiles, Heath Ledger. You all know the one. And Kay appeared as herself in 10 Things I Hate About You, singing a cover of Cruel to Be Kind when Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles are at their high school prom. So Rachel did sing on some backup vocals, as did Tara Reid and Rosario Dawson. So kudos to them. They all took music lessons in order to look as if they were playing the songs in the film. They went through a band camp with rock band Powder. They learned their characters' instruments and rehearsed the songs for several months before filming. I didn't know who Powder was until I looked them up. And their guitarist now plays with Bon Jovi. So they're pretty legit. They got lessons from the best of the best. Rosario Dawson can actually sing, as we know from the Rent movie. But some other amazing singers also auditioned for her role. Beyonce.
Wow.
Aaliyah, Lisa Lopez, they all auditioned for the role of Valerie. And allegedly, the filmmaker said Beyonce was too quiet and shy. Like, oh my God, let me get at them.
That must have been pre-Sasha Fierce, because Sasha Fierce is not shy. Well, Three Small Words was a great pick, Kels, like a nice way to start us off. But now I'm going to bring us back a few notches. And everybody grab your tissues, because the next song we're going to discuss is from a movie that honestly makes me cry every time I watch it without fail. And that is Only Hope from A Walk to Remember. So this movie was an adaptation of a Nicholas Sparks novel and starred Hottie Shane West, Mandy Moore, Peter Coyote, and Daryl Hannah. It was released in January of 2002, aka 21 years ago. Holy shit. And it was a box office smash success. It made over $47 million on an $11 million budget.
I loved this movie when it came out. I watched it on repeat just to hurt myself, I guess.
Yes, self-inflicted pain. That's what it was. Like, I don't know why I kept watching it, but I did.
I was in love with Shane West also. It's not a movie without having a crush on someone.
At the time, he was a certified hottie bad boy. Like, he was my bad boy. I was all in on Shane West. A Walk to Remember follows the rite of passage of a jaded asshole high school senior, aka Shane West, who falls in love with a classmate he and his friends once bullied the shit out of, aka Mandy Moore. He discovers she has terminal cancer, but the two form this crazy connection that anyone can only hope for. It only took 39 days to film. This was despite Mandy only being able to work 10 hours a day because, oh, she was a minor while they were filming. She was 17 years old. Kelsey, did you know this was based on a true story?
I had no idea. It's like so sad.
I know. So I didn't either. And here's the background. The inspiration for A Walk to Remember was actually author Nicholas Sparks' sister, Danielle Sparks Lewis, and she died of breast cancer in 2000. After her death, Nicholas Sparks admitted that this plot was inspired by her life. Danielle, I guess, met a man who wanted to marry her. And then even though he knew she was sick and he knew she might not make it, they got married. How touching. Where are my tissues?
I feel like now we know why Nicholas Sparks is always writing like sad movies and books.
But to the music. The soundtrack was released in January of 2002, and it peaked at 34 on the charts. Ultimately, it went platinum, and I definitely had this album. Now, for me, the music was a huge part of this film. Like, besides Only Hope, the soundtrack gave us other Mandy bops, such as Cry. And another personal favorite, It's Gonna Be Love. By the way, I almost picked It's Gonna Be Love instead of Only Hope. It was extremely close. I love both of those songs so much. The soundtrack had other great non-Mandy songs as well, like Mother, We Can't Get Enough from the New Radicals. Meant to Live by Switchfoot. And Dancing in the Moonlight by the Top Loaders. For a movie that sends me into a goddamn tailspin every time I watch it, the soundtrack was packed with bangers. So I mentioned in the beginning that Only Hope was a cover, and the little story behind this is that Mandy's manager at the time, John Lachey, served as the music supervisor for the film, and he instantly wanted Switchfoot's music to be incorporated into this film after hearing them. He ultimately would later become Switchfoot's manager, but so he was a big Switchfoot fan. And when they approached Switchfoot about using their music for the film, they had no idea who Mandy Moore was. They had never heard her music, but Only Hope was their song originally. And we also get their version on the soundtrack. Me, It's very good, but I don't think it holds a candle to Mandy's version, but that's just my humble opinion. She really does a nice job with it. And I remember in the movie when she's singing that song or in the musical and she's like in her dress and sweater and her voice legit just sounds like so angelic. It's so simple, like no flair, just Jamie Sullivan singing. And it's just such a touching song. The last chorus where she goes up a note, it just gives me chills every time.
Agree. This was one of those ones that like you heard the song and everyone's like, oh my God. Also, like that sweater, she just looked so angelic.
Our angel Mandy. That's why we have to mention Only Hope on our countdown. The next one I actually rewatched in preparation for this episode. This next pick is, in my opinion, a perfect melting pot of some of our favorite pop kings and queens of the time. And Mandy Moore does also appear on this next one. It's really a dream come true. The song is On the Line, the title track off the soundtrack album to the movie of the same name. I wish you knew what. Kelsey, I have a feeling you don't remember this one.
I remember it. I'm sorry to report that I chose not to see it and I actively tried to avoid it because back then I was just so deep in my BSB stand-up. And if I was one thing in 2001, it was loyal to my mans. And I refused to support NSYNC at the box office.
I understand. I just could not ignore it. I just was counting down the days till this movie came out. I mean, if BSB was in this movie, I would have honestly passed away. So it's probably good that it just was what it was. But okay, for those of you that don't recall this, a quick summary. On the Line is kind of a cheesy romantic comedy starring Lance Bass, Joey Fatone, and Emmanuel Chikri. And the film also had a ton of cameos. It had Richie Sambora, Jerry Stiller, Al Green. It was just a hodgepodge of people. Kevin, aka Lance, has everything going for him, but his lifelong lack of confidence keeps him from finding true love and happiness. And so when Kevin meets the girl of his dreams on the Chicago train and they connect immediately, but he doesn't ask her name or her number and he can't find her, he can't forget her. And so he decides to take a chance and he launches this massive campaign to locate Abby. He puts a bunch of ads up in the city, billboards, like, have you seen this girl? Like, it's actually a cute concept, cute love story, albeit extremely cheesy. The idea for doing this type of film came together because NSYNC was apparently in talks of doing a feature film as a group in the vein of A Hard Day's Night. And that never played out. On the Line was actually Lance's first film through his production company called A Happy Place. And Lance initially intended to only produce and not star in the movie, but lo and behold, NSYNC's management gave the band a month and a half of downtime before they started recording Celebrity. So it's just Lance and Joey in this movie. But during the film's closing credits, Justin and Chris appear as comical hair and makeup artists and mock behind-the-scenes footage. JC Chazé also had a cameo as a bartender, but his scene was cut out. Criminal offense. Obviously, as Kelsey kind of alluded to, On the Line was heavily marketed towards NSYNC fans. The trailers were shown at the start of their Pop Odyssey tour, and it was released in theaters on October 26, 2001. Just like Josie and the Pussycats, this film was a box office flop. It grossed only $4.3 million domestically with a budget of $10 million. So like didn't even make the halfway mark. Womp womp.
I feel like I remember seeing that and being like, yeah, because they didn't have a Backstreet Boy.
No, imagine if they had a Backstreet Boy. Like, oh my God, we couldn't have taken it. It would have been too much. But Lance had an answer for this. He attributed the film's poor box office performance to the release date, which happened to be just a month after the September 11th attacks. He wrote in his autobiography that halfway through the press junket, the president declared war, and that was it. Our film was finished. We had wanted to entertain America, to give back some good feelings, but once the country went to war, there was no way our film was going to be on anyone's top priority list.
I hear it. The country was in mourning. It wasn't like a happy time where people wanted to like go zone out for a couple hours.
The film soundtrack was also released in 2001 and it featured songs by Mandy Moore, Vitamin C, Robin, Black, BB Mac, NSYNC, and Britney Spears. JC Chazé was listed as the lead producer of the album. And the song On the Line was honestly the star of the soundtrack, in my opinion, because it was just this perfect pop love song, bubblegum extravaganza with some of our favorites performing together. Again, this is what dreams are made of, people. The song On the Line featured Joey, Lance, BB Mac, and Mandy Moore in a music video with all of them together.
It's like crazy that it didn't do better with all of that star power.
Right? I mean, they weren't in the movie, but like, I don't even think the soundtrack charted. Just a bummer. I was also a big fan of the unreleased NSYNC song that made it on the soundtrack as well. It was a reject from the album Celebrity. It's called That Girl Will Never Be Mine. While it isn't a Max Martin number, does it sound Swedish to you? Because it certainly does to me. Those beats. Well, it makes sense because Max Martin, frequent collaborators Christian Lunden and Andreas Carlson are behind it.
Speaking of NSYNC, they were also infiltrating my favorite Disney movies of the time. They make a cameo in my next pick, which is 1999's Tarzan. Mary, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Tarzan because it definitely wasn't my favorite Disney movie. That is Hercules, 100%. It's Hercules or like Aladdin. But the soundtrack to me just deserved a mention because it was really revolutionary at the time. And I feel like those songs could also stand on their own and become a part of the history that like we talked about earlier.
Looking back as an adult, like that would be a movie that stands the test of time. It's just great for everybody. And the music, it just puts it over the top.
Because Phil Collins just popped off with this. It's actually insane. So every song on the soundtrack was composed by Phil Collins. And the soundtrack won a Grammy Award for Best Soundtrack Album. And for his contribution, Phil received an American Music Award for Favorite Adult Contemporary Artist. And this is a comeback for Phil Collins. It put him back in the public eye. So Tarzan was the first Disney soundtrack to be recorded in multiple languages for different markets with Phil Collins. So he recorded it in French, German, Italian, and Spanish. And the soundtrack was so successful, it peaked at number 5 on the Billboard 200. I feel like for an animated movie, that's just really special for an entire soundtrack to reach that level of success. It reached double platinum status. It was Phil Collins's best-selling album of new material in a decade. And I'm sure the first song that comes to mind for most people is You'll Be in My Heart. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Now I just think of my little baby niece and I'm a puddle within 2 seconds. And this was performed by Glenn Close in the movie because Glenn Close does the voice of Tarzan's gorilla mom. How sweet.
Oh.
And Phil Collins sings, of course, the full version. And that's probably the one that people are most familiar with. This song was a huge individual success. It won an Academy Award for Best Original Song, Golden Globe for Best Original Song, a Grammy Award nomination for Best Song Written for a Motion Picture, TV, or other visual media. I mean, this song just popped off. So I was looking into it and I found some cute inspiration. And I found that the song was originally written for Phil's daughter, Lily, aka Emily in Paris.
Oh.
That Lily Collins. Lily was 10 years old at the time and Phil had named the song Lullaby. It's adorable. So You'll Be in My Heart spent 19 non-consecutive weeks at number 1 on the adult contemporary charts. I mean, that is just, it's huge.
I also just read an article on Billboard. They just did a ranking this year of the best Disney songs of all time. And You'll Be in My Heart was ranked at number 34, which obviously is great. But I'm surprised. I thought it would be a little bit higher.
I feel like it did pretty well for like an animated movie soundtrack. Like when we think about why the songs were written, it's just like amazing to me. And all of them are so recognizable. Like Two Worlds, also Son of Man. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. When Tarzan's like skating down the mossy vine branches, I was like mesmerized. Like, how does he not get a splinter?
Tarzan was quite a male specimen in this movie. Another bop. Phil gave us no skips on this.
I also love Strangers Like Me.
So good. Oh my God.
So fortunately for us, all roads lead back to boy bands. So NSYNC is featured on this album on track 7. It's called Trashing Up the Camp. There's no words to it, just doobie-doo and a little scatting, and it's so cute. And I know that we could all argue until we're blue in the face about what is the best animated movie soundtrack. Again, we know that they're all beloved, but we just really felt like this one deserved a spot on this list. But that's it for animated movies, but that's not it for Disney made for TV or movie songs. So speaking of Disney, my next pick is Even Stevens, the Influenza musical episode. So this episode aired in 2002, and it was by far and away my favorite Even Stevens episode ever. Mary, you were a big Even Stevens gal, right?
If I told you that I stand, it would be an understatement.
So you already know what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who hasn't recently rewatched, in this episode, Ren, who's played by Christy Carlson Romano, she gets sick and ends up hallucinating an entire musical episode. So she's this straight A student. She's a perfectionist. She's set on getting her perfect attendance award. So even though she's sick, she wakes up this day, she goes to school, and she forgets she has a science project due during sixth period, which is when we get the musical number Of a Generation. Specifically, We Went to the Moon.
We went to the moon, 1969, not 1970, but a year sooner.
I don't think anybody of our age group will ever forget what year we went to the moon. And for that, we have Christy Carlson Romano to thank. It's timeless. Also, Christy Carlson Romano is a legit singer. She was on Broadway. She was Belle in Beauty and the Beast. So she actually sounds so good.
Yeah. So my boyfriend's sister actually saw her in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway and was just blown away first by her talent and also just how like kind she was. Like apparently she stayed after and just took pics and talked with all the fans and was just like the last one there, basically.
Oh, that's really sweet that she did like the backdoor thing. There's some other really fun songs from this episode. Sixth period.
Oh, that's my favorite.
It's so drama. It's so funny. I also love What's the Matter with Ren. So the amazing voice in that clip right there is Lauren Frost, who plays Ren's best friend, Ruby. And surprise, she also had a musical theater background, which I'm sure wasn't hard to put together because she sounds amazing. So what's really special and amazing about this episode is that we love it so much. And so many people who watched Even Stevens will say by far and away, this was their favorite episode. But the Disney executives did not think a musical episode would be successful. The writers were basically scrambling for episode ideas by the end of the second season. And they were like, which trope do we want to do? And they decided to go the musical episode route, knowing that some of the actors like Christy had a background in musical theater. But they had to pitch it really hard because Disney was so anti-music at the time. Can you even imagine Disney, creator of Lizzie McGuire, High School Musical, Hannah Montana, and they're like, music in our scripted TV show? Nah. So I just feel like it really goes to show how radical this idea was and how this episode laid the foundation for so many amazing musical-based shows and inclusions in the future. This was literally a High School Musical before there was High School Musical, and this very episode happened to be the inspiration for it. I read an article on the episode that said one of the writers ran into Gary Marsh, who was the president of Disney Channel, and the Even Stevens writer was like congratulating Gary on the success of High School Musical. And Gary was like, you know, we wouldn't have even done that if you guys hadn't done that musical episode of Even Stevens. That gave us the confidence that musicals could work. So like their impact.
Oh my God, their impact. You talked about Even Stevens and how it laid the foundation for all these other iconic movies. And you mentioned High School Musical. And you all know we couldn't even have this episode without talking about Breaking Free.
We're breaking free.
Now, High School Musical came out in 2006. This movie is directed by Kenny Ortega. And just a little reminder of the plot, Troy Bolton, the basketball team captain, and Gabriela Montez, she's an academically gifted genius transfer student, and they both try out for lead parts in their school musical. They're breaking free, pun intended, from their social norms and causing major drama and divisions in their school cliques. So the song Breaking Free, arguably the biggest song from the trilogy, is sung by Drew Seeley, Zac Efron, and Vanessa Hudgens. More on that later. It was released as a single on June 8th, 2006, and by June 21st, it was certified gold. And in its second week on the Billboard Hot 100, the single jumped from number 86 to number 4. And that's the largest jump in the chart's history up to that point. The soundtrack for the film debuted at number 133 on the charts. And in the album's third week, it climbed to number 10 and it ultimately rose to number 1 on the chart twice. It's just a huge success. Ultimately, the album was certified 4x platinum, and I was definitely one of those purchases. It also boasted bangers like Get Your Head in the Game.
Get your head in the game. Get your head in the game. We gotta get a head in the game.
Start of Something New.
This could be the start of something new. It feels so right to be here with you.
And We're All in This Together. I just cannot wrap my head around like that Disney Channel original movies have soundtracks that are breaking records on the Billboard charts.
It's funny that they work so well outside of the context for which they were designed. Or is it like it was just a great song that they worked their way into the musical? I don't know. It's just so interesting to me. I would love to know how they go about writing songs for these movies because they're all just so fun.
Now that you say that, the song was written and produced by a Jamie Houston. He also wrote and produced Right Here, Right Now and You Are the Music in Me from High School Musical 2. And he's also going to pop up as the writer and producer of another song that I'm going to talk about on this list. So we're going to circle back to him. But oh man, Breaking Free was like a love song of our time, like a high school love song. This was just like a perfect song to scream in your car with the windows down, like with your bestie.
I mean, it's all so good. And even though I was like too old to be watching High School Musical, I think like I still ate it up. I loved it.
Wait, what the fuck? Brad said the same thing to me. He was like, you were into High School Musical? Like, you were too old? Like, that, my sister
was. We were too old.
What?
We were definitively too old.
Oh, my God. I had no idea.
But everyone was talking about it, and I wanted to watch it. So I started watching it just so I could know what everyone was talking about, and I could hear these fun songs. And then I just, like, unironically became obsessed.
Yeah, it was not ironic at all. But so, to touch on the Drew Seeley of it all, in the beginning there was speculation about this, but this is no longer speculative. And even Zach confirmed, and I quote, yeah, to set the record straight, the majority of what is sung in the movie is definitely sung by someone else. His name is Drew Seeley. He's a great guy. But yeah, I sing like the beginnings and ends of all the songs, and hopefully I can fix that in the future, end quote. So like in those super high notes during the song, that final bridge before that last chorus, Vanessa and seemingly Zach go very, very high.
More than you, more than me. Not a woman, but a me. Both of us break free. Sorry.
And while that is Vanessa singing her little heart out on her own, Zach is blended with Drew for those parts. And the emphasis in that blending is definitely given to Drew. We also hear him mixed in on all of Zach's other songs in the movie as well. So yeah, that was kind of a little Disney secret for a while, but it is no longer a secret. And you know, it is what it is. I again read that Billboard article that just came out this year, and they actually ranked Breaking Free the 10th best Disney song of all time. So 25 spots ahead of, you know, Phil Collins. And, you know, whether you agree with, I know, whether you agree with it or not, there's definitely a lot of people that think that's a very good song. But my next choice, another Disney classic, is Strut from the Cheetah Girls 2.
Gotta strut like you mean it. Free your mind. It's not enough. Just dream it. Come on. Come on. Get up.
Strut was the second single off the soundtrack. And notably, this film was also directed by Kenny Ortega, and the 2006 premiere received the highest ratings of all Disney Channel movies at the time, and it had a total of 8.1 million viewers at its premiere, beating the premiere ratings of High School Musical, who had 7.7 million, and Cadet Kelly, the previous record holder, with 7.8 million viewers. It was also, obviously, at that point, was the highest rated Cheetah Girls film in the trilogy. First of all, when do you ever see that in a sequel? Like, I have rarely ever seen a sequel outperform its original movie. I know it happens, but it's not common.
The only other one that I could think of, Mary, was Shrek. I thought Shrek 2 was so much funnier than the original Shrek. Like, I loved it. That was the Shrek only one that I could think of that was, like, better than the original.
Right? I feel like this is, like, a unicorn type thing. You rarely see it, and it happened here. And Cheetah Girls 2 is actually the 8th highest rated Disney Channel original movie of all time. Basic plot summary, Galleria, aka Miss Raven Simone, decides to enter her music group, the Cheetah Girls, which include Adrienne Bailon, Kaylee Williams, and Sabrina Bryan, in a Barcelona music festival, and the girls set out for an adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime. I love how you said that. I love Cheetah Girls. Obsessed.
Oh, same. And the song of the hour, Strut, premiered on Radio Disney on June 20th, 2006. Spoiler alert, the song was written and produced by Jamie Houston. Does that name ring a bell? The man behind Breaking Free. Clearly a hit maker. Like, where is this man? I would love to learn a little bit more about him.
The Max Martin of Disney.
Yes. Oh my, like, who are you? I love it. But Strut debuted at number 60 on the Billboard Hot 100. It was the Cheetah Girls' second single to chart. And this song is their most successful song to date, as it ended up peaking at number 53. Adrienne Bailon sings the lead vocals on this song. And let me tell you, this song was just made for the intricacies of her beautiful and unique voice. She just has all these, like, little riffs, and she has such a good voice. And I don't know if you can tell, she was my favorite Cheetah Girl, hands down. And this soundtrack also featured other bops like The Party's Just Begun. Amigas Cheetahs. Step Up. And this album debuted at number 5 on the Billboard 200 and sold over 1.4 million copies. I know I sound like a broken record, but I continue to be blown away by the success of Disney music. But with Strut, I kind of get it. Strut was just pure pop perfection. The music video, it just showed the girls running through beautiful Barcelona, like singing, taking it all in. Chef's freaking kiss. And it just further inspired my delusions that I was destined to be a pop star.
I know we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I feel like this is exactly why Allie from Allie and AJ didn't want to be Hannah Montana, because she would have, like, charted and become such a pop star in her own right that Allie and AJ, like, wouldn't have been a thing. I can imagine, like, being a little kid and being like, oh, are Cheetah Girls a real band? Because, like, it gets confusing, because when you're charting and you're making real music together, it's like you're kind of a real group. It's just, like, a really interesting, like, microcosm that only happens on, like, Disney.
I know. I feel like it doesn't really happen as much anymore. Like, we were this really unique kind of void where this happened every year, you know, but now, like,
thanks to Even Stevens.
Literally, we owe it all to Even Stevens. But okay, if you guys listen at all, you know me by now, and you know I cannot go one episode without finding a way to mention the legendary Miss Britney Spears. And for this episode, it was super easy because she gave us the incredible coming of age ballad, Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman, for her incredible 2002 cult classic, Crossroads. I'm not a girl. Not yet a woman. This is another legendary cast and production team. It was directed by Tamara Davis and written by the Shonda Rhimes. Talk about girl power. It obviously stars Britney, Anson Mount, Zoe Saldana, Taryn Manning, Kim Cattrall, Justin Long, and Dan Aykroyd. The movie is set in Georgia, and it centers on three teenage girls on a cross-country road trip is they find themselves in their friendship in the process. Like, it does not get more coming of age than that. Everybody loves to discredit Britney for everything and never give her the credit she deserves. But not only did she legitimately shine in this movie, but development for Crossroads began in late 2000 after Britney herself came up with the concept for the movie that was later expanded by Shonda Rhimes. Like, did you know this was her brainchild?
I had no idea.
So Crossroads was Britney's idea, and it was a box office success. It grossed $61 million worldwide on a $10 million budget. And of course, while the plot received negative reviews, haters, Britney's performance as Lucy was very much praised. Now, full disclosure, and because we can do whatever we want and break rules on our podcast, believe it or not, Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman was not on the Crossroads soundtrack. Talk about an odd one. Like, the music video itself is like 100% linked to the movie. Like, how does that make sense? So not on the soundtrack, Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman is from Britney's self-titled album, Britney. And it was released as a single on January 7th, 2002. It was written and produced by our forever bestie, Max Martin. I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman is a song that speaks about the angst and heartache of adolescence being stuck in this middle gray area. Oh my God, I remember listening to this when I was like 11 and thinking, like, I'm a woman. Like, let me live.
All I need is time.
Exactly. Britney herself has actually said she loves this song and it's one of her favorite songs to perform. And we do have a few live performances where the mic is on and it's perfect for her lower register. It's just a beautiful song when she sings it live. And the song received very positive reviews from the music critics. Many considered this to be Britney's standout statement on the album. It was likened to power ballads written by like Diane Warren. While the song did not do well in the United States, I don't think it got the right like support and publicity and press from the label. It reached top 10 in Australia, Germany, Ireland, Sweden, UK, literally everybody but us. Like, what is wrong with the United States? Whatever.
I'm with you, Mary. I feel like a lot of the songs that resonated with us from these movies and stuff are these coming of age songs that helped you
deal with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. 100%.
So the music video was directed by Wayne Isham, and we've mentioned him literally a billion times on our podcast, like the likes of Michael, Janet Jackson, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, like just to skim the surface. And he wanted to show Britney, quote unquote, out in nature. And boy, did he ever. The video was filmed on location in Arizona and Utah, and none of them were shot on green screens. And the video primarily just shows Britney. She's standing on the edge of a cliff. And despite her trepidation and heavy winds while they were shooting, which, quote unquote, almost dropped her over.
Oh.
I know, Britney performed the scene without a safety cable. So,
Oh my God, Britney!
I know. Wayne Isham praised Britney's attitude towards filming the scene, and he claimed that she had not a blink of fear.
Maybe like you need a little fear, like a little healthy fear when you're on a cliff.
Right. Or maybe she's just such a professional that they couldn't even tell.
You're so right.
I've never heard a negative thing about her and her work ethic. And on top of that, she's a fearless queen that does her own stunts. There are multiple versions of this video. And as I said, I've always connected it to Crossroads because one of the videos has clips of the movie interspersed in it. So it's very weird that it's not a part of the soundtrack. Finally, I just remember loving her outfits in this video. It's so Y2K. She has those very low rise, flared jeans, and like a very teeny, teeny tiny crop top. She just looks like a Y2K queen, one with nature. It's incredible.
One with nature in her low rise. Yes. With you. I love it. It was an inspiring music video for sure. And I was like, one day I'm going to do that with my friends. And have you ever driven cross country?
No.
Me neither. I feel like we'd have fun.
I mean, we did it from Boston to Connecticut, and that was our crossroads.
Anyways, so our final pick is very similar, I think, to Crossroads in its emotional appeal, and that is the Hannah Montana movie The Climb. Yes, we're coming back to the Disney movie, sorry. because 2009, Hannah Montana, the movie, changed the game. And I think The Climb, again, was another bop. So this song was written by Jesse Alexander, John Mabe, and it was produced by our man, John Shanks.
Love him.
He is like becoming our Max Martin 2.0. Not that anyone could replace Max Martin, but you know what I'm saying. He's like number two on the list, I feel like. And this was Miley's first solo song to be released to country radio. She'd previously recorded and released a country duet with her dad, Billy Ray Cyrus, which was called Ready, Set, Don't Go. I mean, I definitely never saw Miley as a country artist. She was very steadfast in that pop genre, in my eyes, a little reverse Taylor Swift. So there's some drama around this song. So it was nominated for Best Song Written for a Motion Picture, Television, or Other Visual Media at the Grammy Awards. But the song had to be withdrawn from consideration because it hadn't been written specifically for a movie as the category's eligibility rules required. But we still can count it in this countdown because it was such an important part of the movie. I think we can overlook that, but it doesn't stand up to Grammy standards, allegedly.
Huh.
But it's okay that it got snubbed from the Grammys because it still found so much success elsewhere. It was the 8th best-selling digital single of 2009, pretty big deal, and it became a top 10 single on charts across the world, not just the US, Australia, wow. Canada, Norway. I mean, the song was freaking bumping. And I would like to go on record here for saying that while The Climb is a bop, and I respect it a lot, and I love to sing it very loudly in my car, it is not my favorite song from the movie because Hoedown Throwdown is.
Oh, okay.
I have some fun facts about Hoedown Throwdown. So this one did not chart, which you may be really surprised to hear because it's so good. But apparently the country that loved this song the most was Ireland.
Oh my God, that's so random.
I know. So it reached its highest international peak on the Irish singles chart at number 10. And the working title for this song while they were writing it for the movie was called the Miley Macarena because allegedly they really wanted a song that would be like a Macarena to be within this like dance number within the movie. And because it's like an instructional song, they made it more of a collaboration between the choreographer and Miley and the song's songwriters. There were so many cooks in the kitchen for this one. I just thought it was like very cool how everyone had to come together to make it work. And I love that Miley was involved. You know, she was still really young when this movie came out. And I just thought it was very cool that they would take her style into consideration and her voice.
So continuing on my little trend here, The Climb was ranked number 8. On Billboard's 2023 rankings of top Disney songs of all time. And this is our highest ranking song on the list. Pretty cool.
So, okay. Well, we can't end this episode without mentioning just a few honorable mentions. One of my favorite songs that I ever heard on a movie was in the movie My Date with the President's Daughter. And it was the song that's played in the opening credits and in the trailer. And it literally just goes, My Date with the President's Daughter. Oh, yeah.
My Date with the President's Daughter. My Date with the President's Daughter. Oh, yeah.
I sing this song all the time. I still want the pink dress that the president's daughter changes into during her date with Duncan, who, by the way, is played by Eric Matthews from Boy Meets World. This movie aired in 1998 as part of the Wonderful World of Disney lineup on ABC, and it was everything to me. I love this movie so much.
Okay, so my first honorable mention is a twofer, so buckle up. And it's none other than the bop's Stupid Cupid by Mandy Moore.
Stupid Cupid, you're a real mean guy.
And What Makes You Different Makes You Beautiful by Backstreet Boys.
What makes you different makes you beautiful. What's there inside you shines through to me.
One of my top 10 all-time movies, Princess Diaries. Just a little background information. The Princess Diaries is based on the Meg Cabot book of the same title. Unbelievably, Disney purchased the film rights from Meg for a mere $4,000. What? Robbery. Because Princess Diaries achieved the second highest opening earnings for a live-action G-rated film behind 101 Dalmatians at $33.5 million in just the first week. Ultimately, the movie grossed a whopping $165 million on a budget of $26. The film stars Anne Hathaway, and this is her feature film debut. It was almost Liv Tyler who played the role of Mia Thermopolis.
Wait, I didn't know that. Yeah, That's crazy.
And the director's grandkids convinced him to pick Anne Hathaway because her hair was more princess-like. That was like their reason for it. It was Liv Tyler all the way, though. And we need to do an entire episode on this probably because I found so much incredible like tea and stories while researching. But it also stars, obviously, Julie Andrews. She had been semi-retired for 15 years. But there are also whisperings that, like, Sofia Coppola was also being considered for the position. But a lot of people say that Julie Andrews, like, was the number one pick, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, a queen is never late. Everyone else is simply early. No one else could deliver that line.
It wouldn't have been right with anybody else. There's also an incredible supporting cast. We have Hector Elizondo, who plays that incredible security guard, Joe. No, you can call me Joe. And she's like, Joey. He's like, Joe. And we get Heather Mezzarazzo, who's Lily, her bestie.
She had a public access TV show, which in today's world is basically having a podcast. So mad that it was called Shut Up and Listen, because I love that title so
That's
much.
Ahead of its time, clearly. And then obviously Mandy Moore as Lana, however you want to say it. And Robert Schwartzman, who I love because he played Lily's brother and Mia's eventual crush, boyfriend, whatever you want to call it. He was also the front man of the band Rooney, and I loved Rooney in high school, so this was like the coolest thing ever for me. So in 1999, Disney agreed to produce this movie with Whitney Houston's Brown House Productions. How cool is that? Like, this is a Whitney Houston production. Everything she touches is amazing. The Princess Diaries was Whitney's first feature film production venture and her studio's second film after Cinderella that she was in with Brandy.
Which, by the way, is such a good movie. We should talk about that one.
Oh, we could do probably movies that Whitney Houston was involved in. The Bodyguard. We could do Cinderella, Princess Diaries. Like, she has such a reach. But we're talking about Stupid Cupid, the music, and Mandy Moore was cast as Mia's school rival, Lana Thomas. This was her first credited role, and Mandy was only 16 years old at the time. And she's recalled in interviews, she said, they had no business casting me. I did not know what I was doing. She just said that this movie, it was really what set her career in motion.
I like that being very humble.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, she played that role perfectly. She's a humble queen.
Perfectly.
So the soundtrack, the music from this movie, the soundtrack was released on July 24th, 2001. It peaked at 41 on the charts and was certified gold. Besides Me Anymore and Backstreet Boys, it also features B.B. Mac with Miss You More. Aaron Carter, Little Bitty Pretty One. Crystal Harris, Supergirl. I'm Supergirl, and I'm here to see the world. Bewitched, Hold On. Hold on, but don't hold too tight. Let go, it's gonna be alright. Our girl Myra that we discussed in our One Hit Wonders episode, Miracles Happen. Miracles Happen. Just to name a few, this was a loaded album.
Literally, this album is so good. You guys know I'm in love with B.B. Mac, all three of them, particularly Christian. I mean, Aaron Carter, Crystal Harris, I'm Supergirl. And we get two Backstreet Boys in that music video. I mean, this was our first like new Backstreet Boys song in a while post Black and Blue era. Mm. So I was just like, as soon as I heard them singing, I was like, oh. That's Backstreet Boys. And I like could not get my hands on it fast enough. I loved it. Whitney Houston behind the scenes. We should have known that it was going to be bumping.
I know. And that's such an interesting point, Kelsey, because Whitney and her production studio were notably like very heavily involved in curating music for the film. I mean, to me, that just explains why there are like no skips on this soundtrack. Mandy recorded her song, you know, Stupid Cupid. That was actually a cover of Connie Francis's song, Stupid Cupid. I don't know who Connie Francis is. I had no idea this was a cover.
I feel like I knew it was because when you're in high school, everyone's always doing covers for like their acapella groups.
That's
or whatever.
True.
Like I didn't think she had like a band or anything. I just thought she was like the it girl.
Oh, she was the it girl. Like looking at her in that movie, I was like, I looked a little bit more like Mia at the time. I had my big glasses.
I was the before Mia.
Yes, yes.
The before photo.
Exactly. Seeing Mandy Moore with her blonde hair, like her little skirts for the song she's performing at their beach party with her little girl group, but they all have the rhyming names like Lana, Fontana, something else. Like, and Mia is there. She's a princess now, and she's there with Mandy's ex-boyfriend, Josh, aka hottie of our youth, Eric Von Detten. Mandy just looked so good. I thought she did a great job in this movie. And like her and her girls do this cute little dance at the beach when they're singing the song. I love her little stupid cupid.
Stupid cupid, stop picking on me.
Her little squeak she does. Oh,
no, it's so cute. I was not cute.
And like she was actually 16 when she filmed this.
Unfair. Look like that. Whatever.
Whatever. That's why she's a famous celebrity.
One of the good things about Mia Thermopolis is that she taught us that you're not ugly, you're just poor. So I feel like we all learned that from a young age and it made us feel a little bit better about ourselves.
100%. Pivoting to my double feature on this honorable mention, what makes you different, parentheses, makes you beautiful, and parentheses. And this is still a non-skip for me to this day. Like, I'm honestly wondering if we can request it for the Cancun trip, maybe. Like
100%. That's on there. Top 10.
Yeah, but it's just this beautiful love song with the best message in the world. It's like being different's okay. It's what makes you who you are. It's what makes you beautifully unique. And the blend, the Backstreet Boys blend is just so peak here. Their guys have their perfect harmonies on the chorus. And the sweet Howie D is actually a credited writer on this track. And he gets a lot of deserved solo time on this song as well. It's just incredible.
Howie, I feel like, really never got time in the sun like he should have. And it just tracks that he would have had a hand in such a sweet song.
Beautiful love song. I know, I know. Okay, tell me what's your next one, Kels.
Okay, so my next honorable mention is kind of a niche song, but we've all seen, I mean, we're all friends here. We've all seen Bring It On, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my pick is Cliff's song that he wrote for Torrance. It's called You're Just What I Need.
You're just what I need. Not everything works as it seems. That's all to me.
I mean, who didn't want a boy to write a song for them in high school while they jump on their bed with pom-poms? In the beginning when he's like, I love your pom-poms. I'd feed you bonbons all night. Oh my God, I lost my mind. So I had no idea what this song was. I thought that maybe they just wrote it for the movie. I thought maybe the actor who plays Jesse Branford, who plays Cliff, sang it. I just sort of like assumed that it was him, but found out some really interesting stuff. So this song was actually performed by a band called Rufus King. And this was a full original song that was already out there. It just wasn't that well known. And they just plopped it in this movie and recorded that little intro so it went along with the narrative a little bit better. So just like myself, many others assume that it was Jesse Branford who played Cliff was singing along, but apparently Jesse didn't even know what song they put into the movie until he saw it for the first time. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I also think, you know, since it's been a while since I've watched Bring It On, but towards the end of the movie in the cheer mix for the Toros Nationals performance, it snippets a little piece of the song, Just What I Need. And it was like her little nod to Cliff. She puts a little sample of it. And that's when we see him like pumping his fist in the crowd, which is like super cute. So it was an important song for the movie, but it was also this band, Rufus King's best known song, because who could have asked for better awareness than getting in the movie of the year 2000, Bring It On. So getting a track in the movie helped them gain credibility and legitimacy. But unfortunately, in July of 2000, 2 weeks before the film even came out, the band broke up over, quote, major creative differences, end quote. Oh my God, can you imagine? Like, they finally get like their big ass break and they're done?
I wonder what happened.
I don't know. I mean, I found like a couple articles on it, but since then, I mean, they have like a Facebook page, I guess, that has like some little updates, but they haven't updated since 2018.
Ooh.
They pretty much all just like disappeared from social media. But I mean, how cool that people are singing their song all these years later. It's like a cult favorite.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's cooler than most of us, right?
No, you're so right. This is just one of those scenes in the movie where I'll never forget it. I remember seeing it for the first time and just loving it.
Well, it was a great pick. Thank you for sharing that one, Kels. My next one is going to be a Lindsay Lohan bop, aka drama queen, parentheses, that girl, from Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen.
That girl was a woman.
The movie stars Lindsay Lohan, who plays an ambitious teen who goes by the name of Lola. Her name is really Mary, and I, like, personally relate to this so hard because, like, Mary is the most boring name ever. She needed to spice it up, and so I totally understand. But Lola really wants to be a famous actress, but her dream of performing on Broadway suffers a major setback when her family moves from NYC to suburban New Jersey. Determined to make the best of it, however, Lola embarks on a mission to become the most popular girl at her new high school, and that sends her right on a collision course with the catty Carla Santini, aka Megan Fox. Side note, this was Megan's big screen debut. Before this, she only appeared as an uncredited extra in Bad Boys and in the direct-to-DVD film Holiday in the Sun that we just talked about. Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen came out in February of 2004. It had a very pretty, mostly negative critical reaction, but commercially it did okay. You know, it had a $15 million budget. It made $33 million, so at least it was profitable, unlike some of the movies we've discussed tonight. And it reached number two at the box office behind 50 First Dates. Drama alert, the role was originally offered to Hilary Duff, who decided to pass, and it went to Lindsay Lohan instead. And like, I love my girl Hilary, but I do think Lindsay was perfect for this role.
I can't see Hilary doing this article. If anything, I feel like Hilary kind of played this character in Cadet Kelly, like the free spirit, like really artsy fartsy. But no, Lindsay frickin' nailed it.
Lindsay also recorded 4 songs for this film, including Drama Queen. And I just love this song. It's so upbeat, bubbly, earworm. Like, the chorus is catchy AF, and I still get it in my head till this day. I think this song's so funny and like cheesy as well. Like, I love that Lindsay does this like talking interlude near the end of the song.
Life is a work of art. You gotta paint it colorful. Can make it anything you want. Don't stick to any rules.
You gotta paint it colorful. Oh yeah. I tell myself that.
Yes.
Every day.
I was like just singing that to Brad today. He's just like, what is this?
You wouldn't get it, Brad. You were a teenage drama queen.
No, but it's perfect. And Lindsay was actually listed as a writer on this track, which I thought was interesting. And it won Best Song to Watch Your Dad Sing at the 2004 Radio Disney Awards, which like I could see that. I would love to see my dad sing that song. The soundtrack was Flames in general, and it also boasted Tomorrow by Lilix. So good. 1, 2, 3 by Nikki Cleary.
1, 2, 3, you're falling in love with me.
Perfect by Simple Plan.
Sorry, I can't be perfect.
I'm Ready by Cherie. Like,
open for the woman, I'm ready, ready.
Again, another just loaded soundtrack. And the fashion in this movie and in this like music video was next level amazing and extra. Like, and like that final dance scene, Lindsay's wearing that pink and orange, like bell bottom, sparkly two piece set. She just looks so good. And I wanted to look like that. And it's just like a perfect times capsule of like Y2K. Okay, everybody's probably fallen asleep by now, but we're gonna do my final honorable mention. And again, none of these were in a particular order, so please do not get offended. But this is a duet that lives in my head, and it's the reason that I'm singing. Either you get it or you don't. It's This Is Me from Camp Rock. Oh, goodness. Okay, Camp Rock was the 73rd Disney Channel original movie. 73rd! And it premiered on June 20th, 2008. Camp Rock famously stars Demi Lovato and Joe Jonas. Camp Rock was viewed by 8.9 viewers on the night of its premiere and is currently the third highest viewed Disney Channel original movie of all time behind High School Musical 2 and Wizards of Waverly Place. So, an absolute success. Disney definitely found its niche with the movie musicals. Thanks again for paving the way, Even Stevens. So, in Camp Rock, aspiring singer Mitchie, aka Demi, visits Camp Rock, a summer music camp. This was probably your dream, Kelsey. And This Is Me is the first song that Demi's character Mitchie sang with Joe's character, Shane. Mitchie wrote the song in the beginning of the film, and she was heard in an acoustic version on piano, but not seen by Shane, who was like, who is this girl singing this song? I need to find you. Or in Joe's words, I gotta find you. Yes.
I gotta find you.
And so there's this like talent show at the end, the final jam session, and everybody's performing. Shane's like, I haven't found this girl. And finally, Mitchie gets up and sings, This Is Me. So, spoiler alert, Shane finally found her, and he sang part of the song he wrote, Gotta Find You, and the two songs are combined to make this version of This Is Me that we all know and love. Oh my God, again, pop culture heaven.
I just will never get past the Camp Rock chant running through the woods.
Oh yes, there's so many great memes from this movie.
It makes me so happy.
Chef's kiss. But
yeah, the music is great. I love yes. Joe Jonas. Wasn't this like our first introduction to Demi pretty much?
I
like
I so.
At least didn't really know who she was.
Yes.
So I was so impressed with her and her voice. I mean, for such a big sound to come from such a young girl, it was like amazing.
Super impressive. And the album did pretty impressive as well. It came out in June 2008. It reached top 10 in 6 countries. It peaked at number 3 in the United States. And by 2009, it was already certified platinum. This Is Me reached number 9 on the charts and is also certified platinum. And frankly, this is no surprise because it's a freaking bop. So catchy. Like you kind of said, Kelsey, Demi and Joe's voice just sound so perfect together. And she just really shows off her range. Oh my God, I listened to this an embarrassing amount of times. And it just like fueled my delusion that I would one day flourish into a pop star and have my own moment with Joe Jonas or Nick Carter doing this. Delusional. But anywho, this is where Demi and the Jonas Brothers were first connected. And Demi and Joe started dating in 2010, 2 years after the film and subsequent touring together. And it said they split just 3 months later. And oh my goodness, Kelsey, there's this iconic video of them performing together, seemingly probably right after that breakup. And they do not look so enamored with one another. Let's just say that. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and they sang Wouldn't Change a Thing.
Oh, was like it that
face
one?
To face, but we don't see eye to eye. And they're like literally not looking at each other.
They just look so pissed off at one another.
Unhappy.
And yeah.
They are so mad. They
so
won't even
good.
Look at each other.
It's so good. I love it so much. But in summation, This Is Me was ranked number 31 on Billboard's 100 Best Disney Songs of All Time. So interestingly enough, higher than Phil Collins' You'll Be in My Heart. Again, I don't know if I agree with it. It's obviously a really good song, but you know, they're all legends and they all deserve their flowers.
They do.
Kelsey, so I've been talking about this Billboard list the whole episode. Any guesses what Billboard deemed to be the top 5 Disney songs of all time?
Let It Go has to be on there.
All right, I'm going to reveal the list. Number one, Part of Your World.
Okay.
Little Mermaid.
Part of that.
Which I get. Number two is Let It Go. Number three is It's a Small World. Okay, bullshit.
Ew.
I know.
Okay, no.
Number four, Be Our Guest from Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, that song fucks. I get it.
Number five, When You Wish Upon a Star.
Going for nostalgia here and not like actually good.
I know, but we had The Climb at eight. We had Breaking Free at 10. I'm pretty sure six was A Whole New World.
So many worlds. It's a Small World, Part of Your World, A Whole New World. There's so many worlds. Anyways, we're turning delusional. So how about we wrap up this episode? But before we go, we wanted to send out a huge thank you to all of our listeners who give us 5 stars and leave us reviews. This one, I can't even pretend to pronounce your username, but you gave us 5 stars and the title of your review was Yas Queens. And we just really love that energy. And this review says, recently found this podcast and I love it. I just listened to the new Mary Kate and Ashley episode and it was everything. I grew up idolizing those girls. I love how this podcast tells me all the tea on these nostalgic pop culture topics that were such a huge part of my childhood and teenage years. Born in 89 over here. Yes, Queens. Aww. Thank you. XOXO. What a delight to read that. Thank you so much for leaving that review. And if you're still listening to us, I mean, first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all, please do the same and give us 5 stars and leave us a little review, but only if it's nice.
Yes.
Feel free to DM us whatever you want in private. Just don't.
Please don't mess with our rankings or roast us in public. Thank you. We're fragile.
Thank you guys. We're fragile. Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you so much and have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.